You're too damn white, guys.
Welcome back to another Too Damn White Guys. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
And we have got a ridiculous episode for you guys today. We're going to be talking about the craziest things people have thought about throughout history. We're going to be talking about debates and crazy scientific beliefs and misconceptions of all kinds. We're going to be covering a wide gamut of hilarity today, so this should be a fun one. I'm excited.
Just weird things that happen. Yep.
We've been planning on doing this episode for a couple weeks, and we've been trying to gather some good food for thought, and we're going to bring it to you today, and we hope you enjoy it. So,
well, we don't know what each other has picked, so this is going to be a bit of a surprise on both sides.
Why don't you take it, the first one, Andrew, since you've got one that's modern day.
The legislature in Mississippi just passed a law that you can't call any vegetarian products burgers or dogs, like hot dogs, basically. You have to call them something else. I don't know, like a veggie patty, I guess you could call it. But you can't call it a veggie burger. No more veggie burgers, no more veggie dogs, no more tofu dogs, nothing like that.
So they don't want the Impossible Burger called, they just want it to be called the Impossible.
The Impossible, exactly, yeah.
Can they call it a sandwich?
The reasoning is to protect farmers, I guess. So it has, the law literally says that, quote, burgers, and the protected words burgers and dogs.
guess, That's like ridiculous.
Hot dogs. Yeah,
because
hot
dogs
actually
hot dogs
are not
aren't dogs,
dogs
either.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hope they're not made from dogs.
Some of them probably are.
the argument is to protect farmers, I guess. So the law literally says that those products have to be made from slaughtered animals. Very nice. So yeah, it's to protect them from the encroachment of like Impossible Burger, which is becoming really popular and stuff like that. I don't think anyone is ever confused by a product labeled Veggie Burger. That's what it theoretically says, but the reason is just intrusion of farmers and big agro into politics, basically.
It's still hilarious to me, the thought that, like, you know, there's this huge movement towards veganism and vegetarianism, and it's not new, obviously, but, you know, it's becoming like this moral thing now. Like, are you a vegetarian? Do you eat animals? But, like, people who want to abstain from eating meat, they don't want to abstain from the experience of eating meat. They want to... Yeah, they still want replacements, you know.
Some people do and some people don't. Actually, there are a lot of vegetarians who don't want anything that tastes like meat, don't want anything that's like meat at all. There's kind of two kinds, I guess, of vegetarians.
Right.
One is ones who just don't want to eat meat but like meat, and others really just don't want anything to do with it at all, even whether it tastes like it or, yeah, so Impossible Burger wouldn't be for them, I guess.
Yeah, but the existence of this market just cracks me up. Like, and I personally... I like the Impossible Burger. It's delicious. And
I love it.
I'm not saying that it shouldn't exist. It's just hilarious that as a species, it's like we don't want to abstain from the things that we don't think we should be eating. We just want replacements that taste exactly the same. And it's just kind of funny to me. I don't know.
And kind of counter reaction also, Arby, which proclaims itself home of the meats, literally the meats in quotes, is now making meat-based plant products. So you can have like
meat-based plant products.
Yeah, like carrots, which are made out of meat, basically.
So they're
trying to make vegetables out of meat. It's kind of the opposite.
How would you like to know that your entire life is heading towards becoming a carrot?
All of
your efforts, you become kind of...
Yeah, it's turkey that's been shaped and colored to look like a carrot.
I see no... Now, this is a stupid market. I see no point for this market. It can't be good for you. I understand meat to an extent because, like, you know, like, if you're wanting a meat alternative that tastes like meat, like, I get that because meat's probably not the healthiest thing for people to be eating anyways, but there's certain things you can't get from plants, so why would you create a plant alternative based in... It just makes no sense. Like,
it's
counter-reactionary.
It's just the social aspect of it. There's no actual reason to do it at all. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that market's going to collapse. This first one I'm going to lead with is spontaneous generation.
Mm.
This is a scientific misconception which was believed by a lot of people a long, long time ago. Up until about the 19th century, actually, there was a lot of people who, you would find that would have subscribed to this theory. And basically it says that that cells and germs and even like living organisms could just be created out of like dirt or thin air. And and a lot of this stems, not everybody who subscribed to this would attribute the belief to the Bible, but a lot of people would attribute it to like the creation narrative in Genesis, because it says that God created man from dirt and all that stuff. But the funniest aspect of this theory is that the earliest believers in this theory thought that the very first humans were adults, and they were just conjured up out of the dirt. And their defense for this reasoning was that how else would humans have survived unless the first ones were adults?
That's true. Yeah.
It's kind of, funny.
That's like the Adam and Eve thing, right? Yeah, exactly. It's the chicken and egg thing. Adam and Eve. Like how could the babies come before the adults?
Yeah. Which is funny, but obviously this idea is not held up to scientific consensus in modern day. But there was a Greek philosopher named Anaximander who was a big supporter of this ideology. And there was actually a recipe book that used to exist where you could turn to create animals out of just random objects. And and there was one recipe how to make a scorpion, and it called for basil to be placed between two bricks and left out in the sunlight for an extended period of time.
Good luck. Well, maybe the basil just attracts the scorpions.
Yeah, that's probably more. The basil's gone. The scorpion ate it. And now it's a scorpion.
Yeah. Although I think they pretty much eat insects and meat and stuff. They'd prefer to go to Arby's than get an Impossible Burger.
Yeah, exactly.
But actually, there is some basis for that. So we do know that particles do spring into existence out of nothingness. It's the background vacuum, basically, of space. You can get particles just suddenly appearing. There's some probability for particles to suddenly appear. It's not like whole animals or anything like that. Statistically, it definitely happens. That's kind of what's
just like the uncertainty principle.
It is. It's related to that. Yeah. But it's the background vacuum and you get particles. Yeah. I don't know. You get particles sometimes springing into existence, basically. Yeah. And then they spring back out of existence, too.
It is a crazy thought to think, how did the earliest, you know, not even just humans, but like the earliest animals, how would they have survived if they were just, if the first, you know, there must have been a generation of just babies that just happened to.
Yeah, but it doesn't work like that at all. It's just a very slow transition. It's not like any animal. It's not like in any generation there's a significant change that you can actually notice. Every animal is just slightly different from its ancestors, from its parents, such that it's a continuous chain of slight, tiny, tiny, minute changes back from us or whatever, every animal that exists today back to bacteria. So it's not like at any point you would have a significant difference. It's just tiny, tiny changes along the way.
Right. I'm just saying that like at some point there was just, I'm not even saying it was people, but there was just a generation of babies, whether it was like, you know, baby reptiles or baby, you know, whatever would have been first, fish probably. But like at some point there would have been this generation of just like tiny little babies that, you know, probably a lot of them died. I don't know. But it's interesting that people thought about this spontaneous generation.
Oh, yeah, in terms of the spontaneous generation, yeah. All right. Well, there was a mathematician in the 1800s who spent the greater part of his life trying to compute all the digits of pi, or as many digits of pi as possible. Obviously, there's infinite, or we don't actually know if there's infinite, but there probably is infinite digits of pi. So he spent his whole life calculating them, and eventually he got to 707 decimal places. So that's a lot of decimals. But then when we were checking his math in the 1900s, especially using computers, we have computers now that can calculate thousands and thousands of digits of pi in a matter of seconds. So now we do like 2040 seconds or something like that. We noticed that he actually made some errors. And so not only do computers do everything he did in his whole life much, much faster in a few seconds, but he was wrong about a lot of his computations. So he spent his whole life doing something that now we can do a lot better, and he was wrong. So
yikes.
I don't know if any life is wasted, but that's got to be a pretty good contender.
Well, yeah, you don't want to say that guy wasted his life, but it is hilarious that a computer basically not only outperformed him, but proved a lot of his work wrong, and the work he spent his entire life doing in just a matter of seconds.
Well, yeah, I guess you could argue that just his enthusiasm or something he revealed or something about his life probably may have inspired others. So actually, he may have inspired, you know, eventually the people who developed the computer and things like that.
Right.
So it's not that he was necessarily that his life was wasted, but it is kind of a lot of effort that gets overturned.
Yeah. So there's this old idea that called the four humors that that people used to think determined whether or not you were healthy. And it basically consisted of these four properties called melancholic, phlegmatic, choleric, and sanguine. And I'm probably not pronouncing these right. These sound kind of Italian or something. What, you would probably know better than me.
Latin. They're Latin. Melancholic might possibly be Greek, but sanguine Greek. Is blood, basically. It definitely is Latin in origin, yeah.
So basically, this idea says that a healthy person has the ideal balance of black bile, yellow bile, blood, and phlegm. Mm-hmm. Which you know, people used to basically spend all of their energy making sure that they had the right balance of these four properties.
Yeah.
And didn't.
Are you having enough phlegm? Are you getting enough phlegm?
Exactly.
You take phlegm supplements.
Yeah. And apparently, this is like one of the biggest medical disasters in history, or just like, you know, misguided medical ideas. Like, it just tons of people died because they were just like, this is like what they were thinking was important. And not to say that these aren't important. Obviously, each of these things are important, but you know, we now know that diet is a big factor, and exercise, and you know, the more you know.
Well, because in medicine they couldn't do experiments, right? They weren't allowed to dissect dead people, basically. Only in certain times in history. This was a big debate throughout history, actually. In most cases. They won, the religious argument won that you shouldn't touch, you know, a dead body, basically. But it's really important to be able to find out what's actually inside humans. So people, it's kind of crazy, but until like the 1500s during the Renaissance, people didn't really know what was actually inside your body.
Like, yeah.
Even what the organs looked like or anything like that. They didn't know the heart was pumping blood or anything. You know, that's why we kind of think you feel with your heart. It's sort of... People didn't know that. They didn't know that the brain was the center of consciousness or anything like that. Actually, the Greeks did figure this out, but then it was forgotten and then rediscovered in the 1500s, hence Renaissance. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole other crazy debate, misconception, whatever you want to call it, from history that, like, you know, just the whole thing you just said about dead bodies being off limits from medical research and stuff like that on its own is like a huge, we could talk about that forever because there's so many things that stem from that, you know, so many things that we never knew because that was off limits. And like, what an amazing thing that we overturned that logic and, you know, were, you know, because like, what if we still hadn't ever cut open a dead body? Like,
yeah, no, medical research would be nowhere without understanding anatomy, obviously. I mean, the reason bloodletting, that was a huge thing throughout most of history.
Yeah.
Which obviously did more harm than good by far. A lot of people were killed just from the doctor. So if you get sick, you're probably going to die, but not because of the disease, because going to the doctor is deadly, basically, because it'll like drain your blood. But it did have a valid symptomatic effect, which is, you know, draining the blood reduces the blood pressure and lowers fevers. So people saw that it was reducing fevers, so they thought it was a good thing, but it was reducing the fever because the people are getting closer to death, basically.
So their body's like shutting down.
Yeah, exactly. So
like, yeah, this is
not
good.
The best thing to do. This is good. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, it's just crazy that now, like today, there's almost this like social pressure to be an organ donor, and it's crazy that like at one point that would have been heresy to be an organ donor.
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, big deal. Plus, I mean, just scientific rigor in general, doing actual controlled experiments on multiple cases rather than just, you know, thinking, hey, it's like witchcraft, basically, or the moon,
right,
or the vampires, or whatever it is, the cats, black cats, and yeah. Yeah, pretty crazy times. Pretty crazy times. I mean, related to the dissection of cadavers, there was a pope who was put on trial In 897, Formosus, the Pope, was put on trial after he was dead for usurping the office. So they exhumed, literally dug open a grave, took the corpse, put it in a chair, and put it in front of a jury and had a trial with the corpse.
Oh my gosh, this happened?
Needless to say, the corpse lost. Yep, it happened. It's called the Cadaver Synod.
What was the purpose of bringing this body into a courtroom?
It was political. It was because there was a dispute from the over the Holy Roman emperors. There's two candidates for emperor, and they each had their candidate for a pope. And one emperor won and put their candidate as on the seat as the pope. Then the emperor died shortly thereafter. So the rival emperor didn't like the pope. And the pope actually had died too. So he wanted to prove that the whole thing was illegitimate, basically. So they put the pope on trial for usurping the office just for political reasons to say, hey, that was like a fake pope, guys. Really, this is the real pope. So they put the pope on trial for the previous pope who died on trial for usurping the office of pope.
I mean, this is probably a stupid question, but like they weren't questioning this dead body or something. Like, what were they?
They were. They had a deacon. Like, they had a minor. They were asking questions and stuff, but they had a minor clergyman kind of answer questions for the dead body. I assume
they turned him into a puppet and they're like moving his mouth.
He's not as a puppet.
I didn't do it.
Exactly.
That's messed up. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise. All right. Geocentricity. The old idea that at one point was very controversial. A lot of people were executed for believing against geocentricity, the idea that the Earth is the center of the universe. You know, this was highly controversial with mainly religious people and now we obviously, nobody really today denies that the Earth is not the center of the universe unless you're a flat earther. But you know, it's just another example of old ideas that, that everybody pretty much believed at one point that now have been debunked by technology and science and how damn smart we're getting.
Well, this is the thing about this, as well as transubstantiation. It's kind of, it's just challenging doctrine, right? So the established doctrine is that Earth is the most important place in the universe. So it's not really the idea itself. It's the fact that the rules, the doctrine of the church say Earth is the center of the universe because, you know, this is God's creation. It's the most important thing he did. He's not going to have like other things that he also made, right? He created Earth.
Yeah.
The Bible said he's created Earth. Earth's got to be the center. So it's not about, it's not that weird to believe that, honestly. Like, it's perfectly reasonable to have Earth be the center of the universe. It's just not supported by the evidence. So if you look at the way the planets move and the way the sun moves, it's just more consistent scientifically, right, with the idea that the sun is the center. So there's nothing crazy about the idea per se. It's just that it's not true, right? But it was clung to even after the evidence suggested it wasn't true.
Right, yeah. I think the common denominator with all of my ideas is that it's just like, these are things that made sense at one point when we knew less. And, you know, obviously the longer we go, the smarter we get, the more we realize the errors of our old ways. And there just seems to be this recurring resistance to new ideas throughout, you know, history, where people don't want to let go of old ideas. They want to just hang on to what they know. Mm. But I think it's just I'm personally so excited when we discover new things and we learn more. And it's just mind-boggling to me that there's ever any resistance to learning, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to basically look at the evidence to see what that tells you and then change your, I guess I wouldn't call them beliefs even, but change your way of thinking based on what is actually true rather than what you just think is true or what you would like to believe.
Yeah, just remaining open-minded.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think people are familiar with the idea that the bread and the wine literally turns into the body and the blood of Jesus during communion. This is called transubstantiation. And this idea had a lot of people killed over the years. There were a lot of religious wars fought over the nature of the communion and whether the body and blood was literally represented in the bread and wine or not. But there's an even... This goes back really far to the very beginning of the Christian church. Before the Council of Nicaea with Emperor Constantine, who basically formalized the rules for Christianity that we know today, and he kind of did that just for unity in the Roman Empire. They sat down and everyone said, okay, these are the rules. These are what we're going to believe. This is part of the Christian doctrine. And these guys, these things are not. Some of those things that were not, that were thrown out, still exist actually today because not all of the Christians were actually under the Roman Empire. There were some that were sort of outside, the Coptics and stuff like that, and the Ethiopian church and Nestorian. Some of them were outside the boundaries of the Roman Empire in law, at least, if not in practice. So,
and the Gnostics, right?
The Gnostics, yeah, exactly. But there was another one that was especially challenging, which is Doceticism, which is that Jesus, his like body, was completely separate from Jesus, his spirit, and like Jesus was too pure to be, like, as the Son of God, he's too pure to be human and do human things. One of the things that came with this, one of the questions was, did Jesus poop? Because,
right? Like,
if Jesus, like, God and too, like, pure to be human in any way, did he actually exist as human or not? And this is something, like, the nature of the Holy Trinity was huge, like, the debate exactly, you know, there's three. Are these three the same in some way? They actually ended up with, like, this weird... The Council of Nicaea, which is what Christians mostly believe today, they ended up with this weird hedge that didn't really answer the question, is Jesus God or is he human, right? And it's kind of unclear, it's kind of both, but it's never really explained how it's one or the other. But this one, Doceticism really separated it out and thought, no, Jesus was like definitely God, he was not human. And therefore, he was, like, too perfect to, like, do any human things, like have sex or... Apparently, he ate, obviously, but I don't know where the food went because, yeah, no bowel movements.
Right. Well, we should also note that this is not, like... It's not crazy to go here in conversation. I feel like we should just neutralize any potential... disgruntled listeners, you know, we're not trying to be polemic here. This is stuff that the founding fathers of Christianity, like, fought over.
Actually debated. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a real debate. It's not like...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. Was Jesus basically human and did he do human things, or was he basically God and do God things, which does not involve pooping?
There's a common denominator in all these stories we're mentioning, and there's, like, this religious and scientific tension to all of them. It's, like, this grappling with, like, trusting things that we don't understand. And, like, if you ask modern Christians today about this argument, they'll just say, well, like, you know, he was all human and he was all God, and we're not supposed to understand how that's true or possible or how it works. It's just like an act of faith to just, like, put, you know, to just not worry about it.
Yeah, I think the debate was mostly settled in favor of him basically being human. But you're right, there's definitely, like, the duality of the nature there. He can be both. But I think that it's settled in the fact that he did do human things. So this asceticism was definitely thrown out, the fact that he couldn't even do human things. By the way, though, this is interesting because in North Korea, they believe that if the leader, who's a god, basically Kim Jong-un, doesn't poop.
They do.
Oh yeah, they believe all kinds of crazy things. Like at age 5, he had an IQ of like 500, and I mean, they believe he's like perfect and divine in every way, or at least they're like instructed to believe. Whether they actually believe it, who knows? But they definitely, yikes, that's part of their doctrine, so to speak, is that the leaders of North Korea are too perfect to have bowel movements.
You know, I've actually had this conversation with some Christian friends of mine about whether or not Jesus pooped, and none of them deny that he would have pooped, and they also don't seem really troubled by the question at all. They're just like, yeah, sure he pooped, of course. What difference does that make? But the point is that in these times, digestion was a mystery. We didn't know how it worked, and it was considered like this disgusting, you know, mystery. This, and it, I mean, it's not any less disgusting now that we know how it works. But the point is that, you know, a lot of people were ostracized over arguing that Jesus did poop back in the day because digestion was such a mystery. And so again, the common denominator is scientific consensus versus the mysteries of the universe being, you know, left to faith or whatever you'd call it to, you know. So it's interesting and it's hilarious and it's no less interesting of a question today. Did Jesus poop? It's maybe even funnier today. All right, so I've got another one called Rain Follows the Plow. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay, so this is an old idea from early civil history. It's like this like pseudoscience claim in climatology that rain follows human settlers. So if you settle a human civilization in the desert, the rain will just find you because you're there, and it will eventually, your area will become, you know, just rich and plentiful. And this is like this is a real idea that a lot of people believed up until modern times.
It's kind of like the Field of Dreams theory. If you build it, they will come.
If you build it, they will come.
But it's not actually that crazy if you think about it, because it seems to me, is mixing up cause and effect, because people tend to build their civilizations in places that are fertile, right? That have a lot of rain, that have good soil, right? And so people saw that. They thought, hey, these civilizations are all in like really good agricultural regions. So therefore, building civilization must cause good agriculture, right? It's actually the opposite. It's that good agriculture causes civilization, but it's just a reversal of cause and effect. So you thought you go out into the desert and of course the gods are going to bring the rain and we're going to have agriculture and it's going to be great. It's just based on observing that all the great civilizations are built in good agricultural areas.
Right. This is why games like Civilization and Settlers of Catan exist, because you got to pick a good place. This theory was eventually brought to an end because people discovered that the rain didn't follow them wherever they went, and they experienced droughts and the societies collapsed.
The other thing is the people who built those civilizations out in the desert probably died, so there's no one left to challenge the theory. No one survived to tell them the opposite. First worker strike in history. This is my last one. The first worker strike in history occurred during the construction of the pyramids, 1152 BCE. Actually, construction of the royal necropolis, not the pyramids. Yeah. So people had this idea that the pyramids were built by slaves, but they were not. There were slaves involved, but most of the workers were actually artisans who were paid, often in beer. Because that was sort of the food back then. You just like ate mushy beer. Beer really meant porridge, actually. It's like a kind of mush that was a bit
slightly fermented oatmeal.
Slightly fermented oatmeal, exactly. Yeah. So that's what people ate. And they were often paid in that. But they were artisans. And you can tell just based on the masonry, it's like really quality. So people thought that these were highly skilled. Basically, they went to the equivalent of college or at least masonry school. And not built by slaves. At least there may have been slaves hauling bricks and stuff like that, but the majority of the actual work was done by skilled artisans. But there's evidence that there was a strike for additional wages, so the workers decided to stop working unless they were paid higher wages, and they were eventually were. It's not like the pharaoh came down and killed them all or brought out the whips or anything like that. It was a worker strike, and it was successful. And
so that's why some of the pyramids don't have tops. They never finished them.
They blown off in the. Well, the pyramids used to look very different. Actually, they were covered in, I don't know if it's marble or something or limestone, whatever it is. But they were covered
limestone and gold. I heard.
They were covered in a smooth finish. Now they're all just the big blocks that have survived. So they all look blocky, but originally they were smooth faced.
That is so crazy to think that we built something so amazing so long ago, and it's still such a mystery. It's like. Ancient Egypt is so fascinating. It is.
But it's also a supreme waste of effort. Just think about the labor of an entire civilization went into building just a block of bricks. Like, what? Think of all the great things they could have done instead of just building a giant heap of bricks, right, for some pharaoh's tomb.
I wonder if we'll say that about the internet one day. We'll be like, what use did this serve? What a waste of time.
Just cat memes. Pretty much. That's what we already say about it today.
That's true. Also, more evidence that it wasn't slaves that built the pyramids is that a lot of the people who built it are buried inside the pyramids. So they wouldn't have buried slaves inside this, like, you know, there were pharaohs buried in there and stuff too. So it was like a place of prominence.
The whole purpose was a tomb for the pharaohs. But are you saying some of the artisans, the architects, were actually buried in the... I wasn't aware of that, but that's quite possible.
Yeah, I read that. I mean, I read it in a book, so it must be true, Andrew.
Right. Or on the internet, so it must be false.
Or on the internet. Right. Yeah, but... yeah, it is. The pyramids are... That could be a whole episode on its own. The pyramids are so fascinating. And, like, who built them and why and how. And
aliens.
Aliens.
It was aliens.
I'd always heard it was a conundrum how they were built. Maybe it's just that it's a conundrum how it was built so long ago. Not that it's a conundrum
they were,
in and of itself.
They were a super ridiculously long time ago. That's the thing that is amazing about them is that they've survived this long. But literally, it's not only the easiest thing to build, but it's also the most durable thing because it's hard to get the block. I mean, it's just a pile of blocks, right? So
yeah. Hence, they're still around.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and then last on the ticket, we've got Newtonian physics versus statistical mechanics and the laws of thermodynamics. This is, you know, the idea a long time ago. People used to think that this kind of is related to determinism, like the idea that things are measurable in concrete terms and everything can be measured on its, you know, individual level and everything can be determined. You know, this is completely at odds with the idea of quantum mechanics and the laws of thermodynamics. The work of Ludwig Boltzmann, who was very controversial in his time. He spent his whole life trying to prove that reality is made up of little tiny particles that should be measured on a level of prediction instead of absolute measurements. And I'm kind of probably butchering this explanation, but basically, Ludwig Boltzmann eventually killed himself because he, you know, received so much resistance to his ideas. And then 3 years after he died, his ideas became mainstream, and they're the ideas we hold to today. And it's what quantum mechanics was based on, the idea that we should measure particles and estimate the measurements based on their current state and where they're going and all that stuff. Instead of like trying to measure concrete things in concrete times and, you know, counting that as a measurement. So, you know, this idea was really controversial again because of religion, and people wanted to think a long time ago that you could know concretely and absolutely what something was and how to measure it and how it reacted to stimulus and things like that. But now we know that a much better model is statistical mechanics. The laws of thermodynamics are built on it, and quantum mechanics, and there's just a lot of mechanics being thrown around right here. This is the mechanics segment, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's just religion. It's actually counterintuitive to common sense how
that's
quantum
true.
Mechanics works, right? If you think you understand quantum mechanics, you don't understand quantum mechanics. That's
well, you said the same thing about you said this same thing about geocentricity. And,
yeah, well, I mean, that,
so you're
that's
arguing
the thing,
that religion is common sense.
Well, no, I don't think it was necessarily religious opposition to quantum mechanics or thermodynamics or anything like that. By that time, it was already sort of past, like, no one cared what they thought, basically. The scientists didn't care. So it was just contrary to what you would expect to happen and contrary to what Newton said happened. So being able to measure things seems like a perfectly reasonable thing to do, and being able to predict things ahead of time seems like a perfectly... Randomness is weird, right? It's
randomness
it would be super
is weird.
Weird if the universe was based on randomness and particles coming into existence and not being able to tell where they were and things like that. That's doesn't make sense intuitively.
This seems like a violation of Occam's razor, is it? Maybe you can defend that.
It seems like it is. It's not, because the evidence suggests that it's true. So Occam's razor basically is, if you have no reason to believe one thing or the other thing, you pick the one that's the simplest. But here you do have a reason. Experiments show that quantum mechanics is correct. That's why you pick it. So it's not just that Occam's razor would suggest that you don't pick quantum mechanics, but there's evidence to support quantum mechanics, which is the reason why you have to support
that one. I see. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, but this idea was revolutionary. It changed how we look at science. We still hold true. These ideas still hold up today. You know, we rely on these to make all the breakthroughs we're making in modern science. And we never would have made any of them if we'd held on to a lot of the original tenets of Newtonian physics. And so, again, it's just another example of how remaining open-minded and, having some plasticity in your thought is, gonna serve you well in the long term.
Well, that's the scientific method, basically. You run experiments and your theories are either supported or not supported by the evidence. And it doesn't matter what you believe or what you think. It's what the evidence actually shows. GPS, computers, there's so many things that are reliant on quantum physics today.
Yeah. Well, this has been a lot of fun. It's a crazy world we live in. It's crazy how much we've debated throughout history and things that we've, how many of these things have people died over, which is so sad to think
ideas.
About.
People die over ideas all the time. Actually, that's the main thing people die over and main thing people fight for as well.
Yeah.
Is ideas.
It's true.
Patriotism is one, but, nationalism, but even just liberty, right? The American Revolution was over ideas.
Nobody's dying over the vegan burgers, not even the animals.
You're right, huh? Well, fewer animals are dying because of the vegan wars.
Yeah, that's true.
We just coined the term vegan wars.
Vegan wars? The new Star Wars. It's going to be the future exactly. franchise.
It will be the decisive conflict of the 21st century.
Vegan wars, the next frontier, and then all the Star Trek fans get pissed off.
Probably it's actually water wars is actually what we'll have.
Yeah.
Over limited water resources.
I think that's probably right. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this crazy, ridiculous, weird episode. We sure had a fun time. If you want to support us, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We love those, and they're so helpful. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm semi-active on there. Andrew's super active. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And we do these episodes every Monday. We hope to have you back next week.
Thanks for listening.